Hello everyone and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast where I, Rod Jones, content manager, and Kate Cooper, head of research policy and standards at the Institute, take a critical look at what's been happening in the world of leadership and management up to the 17th of August 2020. Hello Kate.
Hello Rod.
Well, our first story, Kate, is how should leaders hardwire diversity into artificial intelligence? In the view of Dr. Kanta Dehal and Dr. Stephen Cave of Cambridge's Leverhulme Centre for the Future of Intelligence, race and technology are two of the most powerful and important categories for understanding the world as it has developed, at least since the early modern period. Yet the entanglement of these categories remains understudied. In a statement, Dehal, head of the CFI's Decolonizing AI Initiative, notes, one of the most common interactions with AI technology is through virtual assistants in devices such as smartphones, which talk in standard white middle-class English. Ideas of adding black dialects have been dismissed as too controversial or outside the target market. Kate, what must leaders do to counteract white bias in artificial intelligence and hardwire a diversity-based outlook into emerging tools?
What's most concerning about this is almost, as I've experienced it, the refusal of the people who are working in these technologies to see it as a problem. I mean, I can remember being at a conference a couple of years ago and challenging the lack of diversity. It was a technology conference on the main stage, and I was told either we could talk about that or something important being the technology. So the first step is to say, this isn't good enough. So what we've got to do is say, how can we make it different? And that, of course, means recruiting differently into technological industries, to think very closely, to think very hard about the sort of voices that we use, the representations of smart technology. It's a really big problem, and it's not one that's going to be solved just by talking about it. And it will take somebody that's going to have to do something radical and unpopular, I think, in the first instinct, like we saw with the black dialects, before we see real change here.
Thank you, Kate. Well, our next story asks if it is wise for a leader to hire their harshest critic. This is a very interesting story in that Joe Biden has won acclaim for bringing California Senator Kamala Harris on board as his vice presidential running mate, despite her criticism of him during the Democrats' nomination process, where she stood as his rival. In an essay on Medium, Canadian lawyer and entrepreneur Rachel Scar writes, there are many reasons why choosing Kamala Harris, a former prosecutor, a senator, and a black woman with the ability to connect to a youthful demographic. This was a smart move at this moment in 2020, but hiring his former rival, an outspoken opponent who has criticized him harshly as his running mate, was also a brave move. It's also a good example for all of us, especially if we find ourselves in the position of having to hire a team. Kate, is Clark correct in her assessment? How can rivals who choose to collaborate manage outbreaks of mutual criticism and then channel them into a shared purpose?
I think hiring somebody who fundamentally disagrees with your worldview into a team is a brilliant move, because they are bringing opinions and viewpoints that you don't even think about. And that sort of diversity is to be applauded and encouraged. But what you have to go with that is integrity on the part of the leader and the rest of the team, and a high level of trust. That we hear so much, you don't criticise the person, but you might criticise their views or their behaviour, but it's not a personal attack. And that's the thing that's got to be maintained. And it does remind me of Peter Drucker talking about how important it is for managers to maintain good relationships. And that doesn't mean liking people. It doesn't mean agreeing with people necessarily, but it does mean holding them in high professional regard. And I think that's the thing that has to be held on to.
Thank you, Kate. Our next is a widely reported story that ice cream maker Ben & Jerry's has found itself in a heated row with the British government after the company criticised the government's handling of migrants arriving by boat from France. UK Home Secretary Priti Patel has taken a strict stance on the issue, announcing that the government would stop any illegal attempts to reach the country. In a scathing Twitter thread, Ben and Jerry's called on the British government to show more humanity, adding, people cannot be illegal. In retaliation, British ministers branded Ben and Jerry's ice cream overpriced junk food and told the company to stick to making ice cream. Kate, is this an example of a business taking corporate social responsibility too far?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because if you take any stance on corporate social responsibility, you're essentially engaging with the external environment. And what happens in that environment is difficult not to have a view on. And Ben and Jerry's, of course, founded themselves on a very ethical, as they described it, business model. So you'd expect them to have these sorts of humanitarian views and articulate them. But I think, as we saw with Alex Ohanian of Reddit, you have to do a little bit more than that, don't you? He stood down from the board saying, look, give my space to somebody of colour because they are needed more than I am at the moment. So we have to ask ourselves, yeah, absolutely, Ben and Jerry's are entitled to take a position on this. But what they should also, what are they doing about it? How are they helping? How are their actions supporting their words? And I think then it's very difficult, isn't it, to start arguing with their right to take a position if they are using their reputation, their financial resources to try and do something about this crisis.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story is also about values, and it's a story in The Guardian that the footwear brand Dr. Martens has repaid its furlough cash to the government as a result of strong trading during the lockdown. The 60-year-old footwear brand, famous for its sturdy boots, said sales rose nearly 50% in the year to June, while the group's profits nearly doubled. Kenny Wilson, the chief executive, said it had been a year of exceptional growth, and he was confident of the outlook for the business despite difficulties caused by the coronavirus pandemic. The company said it had claimed furlough payments under the government's job retention scheme, which covered up to 80% of pay for its retail and manufacturing staff between March and June. But the money has now been repaid, given what the firm called its resilience in trading and financial strength during the crisis. Kate, what does this tell us about Dr. Martens' values as an organisation?
Well, as a brand I feel I've grown up with, I'm really pleased to hear about this. And isn't it great, these sorts of stories about companies essentially just doing the right thing? And although it's a very difficult thing immediately to link results to this sort of initiative, surely in the long term, this does so much good for their brand. And of course, Doc Martens have seen a huge revival amongst young people, wearing them all year round, not just because they're sturdy footwear, they're very much a fashion item. And those young people are the talent pool for Doc Martens for the next few decades to keep the brand growing and successful. So I think these sorts of things, they say a lot about the senior leadership team at Doc Martens, but they're also investing in the future, and people, a new generation, will grow up thinking, do you know what, that's a good company.
Well, thank you very much, Kate, and that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the news and views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com, and thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.